following stereo program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. National Public Radio presents a production of the Hollywood Theater of the Year, 2000X. A radio series devoted to stories of the next millennia. Now, here is your host, the award-winning writer and critic, Harlan Ellison.
Good evening. This is your elitist host, Harlan Ellison, with an even more idiosyncratic offering than usual. In selecting the variegated stories Beyond 2000 has and will present, I had no trouble bringing to the attention of our award-winning producer, Mr. Yuri Rosovsky, the works of Asimov, Heinlein, Bradbury, Vonnegut, Le Guin, and the like, because their names are common coin in any literate household. And so, awash in an almost tsunami-like hubris, I battened on a self-image as the splendid source. So you may well imagine my chagrin when I was advised by Mr. Rosovsky that Beyond 2000 was also adapting something called The Mission of the Vega, a title utterly unknown to me. And when I was further advised that The Mission of the Vega had been written by one of my favorite writers, usually identified with forms outside this genre, the extraordinary Swiss playwright Frederick Durrenmatt, I was utterly unmanned. I tried to cling to my wretched little ego by supposing this would be one of those self-important, boring attempts at science fiction by litterateurs from over there in the mainstream. Well, it ain't, folks. Durrenmatt was an exemplar of social conscience in the dramatic medium, and this is as sharp as a wolverine's claw and could not be more relevant as we lurch across the threshold into the 21st century. And so, Frederick Durrenmatt's The Mission of the Vega.
Mr. President of the Free United States of Europe and America, returning to our discussion, please permit me to present to you the recordings I made at your request, Mr. President, during the mission of the Vega, and which concern His Excellency Sir Horace Wood, as well as the negotiations he conducted. With unshakable loyalty and high esteem, especially in the dark times in which we find ourselves, I remain yours faithfully, George Mannerheim, M.D., member of the Secret Service. First, the recordings of the takeoff.
Passengers of the spaceship Vega, all aboard, please. Passengers of the spaceship Vega, all aboard, please.
Well, that's us, Mannerheim. We must leave the Earth. The other gentlemen are on board.
May I request that Your Excellency put on this hat and these dark glasses?
Of course.
The spies might recognize us.
Oh, that's always to be feared.
Yes.
So, is this your first space journey, Sir Horace?
My first.
Oh, really?
You're surprised. Yes. Nowadays, every child sails to the moon and takes a trip to Mars. Our dreams have come true, but I love the Earth too much. And dreams do. Also, one hears there's no climate outside our planet that is even halfway comfortable.
That's a fact, Your Excellency. This way.
Passengers of the spaceship Vega, all aboard, please. Passengers of the spaceship Vega, all aboard, please.
Your Excellency.
You're the captain?
Captain me, sir. May I show Your Excellency to your cabin?
You're being too kind to people like me, Captain. You should be ruder with foreign ministers.
Here you are, Your Excellency. Strange. Dr. Mannerheim is at your disposal.
Thank you.
Shall I fasten your seatbelt, Your Excellency?
Oh, yes, please.
Here we are. How do you feel, Your Excellency?
Change.
I'll give you some Coramin. It's time to turn on the oxygen and the helium.
As you wish.
Would Your Excellency wish to observe the takeoff?
Oh, yes, I'm curious.
That's the airport out there.
Funny. Not a man to be seen.
Yes, they're on the bunkers.
Beautiful morning.
Ah, the red light. Your Excellency, we start in 20 seconds.
Pity to have to fly away. I would have liked to go fishing.
10 more seconds.
Now the sun is rising.
We're starting.
Now we can see the capital. Now the sea. The earth is falling away from us, Mannheim.
Is the pressure bearable?
That's all right.
It's increasing.
Feels queer when one experiences it for the first time.
Breathe regularly.
I'll try.
Vega must reach a velocity of 23,000 miles per hour.
Doesn't appeal to me. I never drive my car over 50. Mannheim.
Your Excellency.
You are the President's personal physician?
His travel physician. I accompanied him to Mars.
And he chose you to accompany me to Venus?
It's a great honor, Your Excellency. The yellow light. Now the acceleration pressure is great.
It would appear so.
Green light. We've now reached the required velocity. The attraction of the Earth is overcome.
Where are we?
5,000 miles over the Earth.
Somewhat high. Okay.
May I release your seatbelt, Your Excellency?
Makes me feel better.
There we are.
Thank you. Beautiful, the Earth. Isn't it, though? It's like a curved shield. Too bad it's so false.
False, Your Excellency.
Its inhabitants don't always tell the truth.
Would Your Excellency wish to visit the observation deck?
Show me the way.
Absolutely. Here we are. May I present Colonel Roy?
Good old Camille Roy?
Yes, Your Excellency.
Who, a year ago, carried out the surprise attack on Hanoi?
Yes, Your Excellency.
And 3 years ago, the surprise attack on Warsaw?
Your Excellency has a good memory.
Only my job, Roy. Only my job. But here comes the War Minister.
Well, here we are, Wood. One puff and float, and you float in space. Great. I was already enthused when I took part in this 40 years ago for the first time. It's become comfortable, space travel. Met a real old graybeard recently whose great-grandfather lived through the pioneering age. In those days, fellows would float...
Now, a recording of the conference, which took place 3 days later on board the Vega, which included all ministers and undersecretaries, and which was presided over by His Excellency Sir Horace.
Gentlemen, I shall start with a short review of the situation. Let us be quite clear what it is we want and what it is we have to do. Since 1945, we have had no world wars. That is now 310 years. The period of partial conflicts followed. The Korean War, Vietnam, the Civil War in India, the interminable Balkan conflicts, the Australian defeat, and the rest of the disputes, whatever their names are. Now a new world war has become unavoidable, however terrible it is for a foreign minister to have to admit this. For 300 years, the world has been preparing for it. Diplomacy has reached the end of our arts. The détente cannot be prolonged. Peace is impossible. The necessity to wage war is greater than the fear of war. The free United States of Europe and America stand opposed to Russia and United Asia, Africa, and Australia. The two opponents have approximately equal power. Approximately. This is the sad reason why members of the free United States find themselves on the spaceship Vega. I now wish to ask the Minister for Extraterrestrial Regions to speak.
Your Excellencies, gentlemen, our position is not altogether happy. The moon is lost, a loss which I personally find even more painful than that of Australia. The Treaty of New Delhi has torn from us the whole side which faces the Earth, and the conditions there, so adverse to all human nature, unfortunately make impossible a war against the Eastern Moon Forts.
And I heard it differently.
To be precise, Sir Horace, both our own and the Eastern Commissioners refused to return to the Earth, whereupon we, and also the East, refrained from sending new ones there.
Who's our last Commissioner?
Bonstetten.
When did he resign?
10 years ago.
Why did he not return?
The reason is not known.
Continue, Madam Undersecretary.
Your Excellencies, gentlemen. Even if the planet Venus is not suited for settlement, it is still of some use. We, as well as the Allied East, have employed Venus for 200 years as a penal colony, and nowadays we use her exclusively for that purpose. Our spaceships unload the prisoners and withdraw again without getting into closer contact with the convicts already there.
Are these convicts free, then?
Free on Venus. As far as the Earth is concerned, they are dead.
And political conditions?
Not known.
The population?
Not known.
How many do we send there?
30,000 a year.
And the East?
Not known.
I do not understand why we need a department for affairs on Venus if we know nothing about that planet.
It is the task of this department to organize the transport of prisoners, Your Excellency. What happens to them afterwards is not the business of the department. The main thing is that we're rid of them.
What kind of people are the convicts which we send to Venus?
Morally inferior human material. Criminals, and then, in second place, those people who express seditious ideas and have to be removed for security reasons.
And whom do the Eastern nations send to Venus?
Also criminals. And then, of course, those people who express Western ideas and have to be removed for security reasons.
It would appear, then, that the human material on Venus is not all morally inferior. I now request the War Minister to instruct us about his aims.
Quite simple. It is a matter of winning that rabble up there for a war against the East. The planet Venus has the strategic advantage that the cloud layer of its atmosphere makes impossible any observation of its surface. An attack can be prepared in secrecy, which is impossible on Earth, since both we and the Easters have artificial satellites from which we can observe one another. I estimate the population of the planet at 2 million. For an attack on the East with hydrogen and cobalt bombs, I need 200,000 men. They can make the spaceships and the bombs themselves if we leave a few scientists behind on Venus.
Have such scientists volunteered?
They're on board.
With whom do we negotiate?
With a certain Peterson.
Do we have more detailed information about that gentleman?
A murderer from Germany.
Nice prospect.
Then with a John Smith.
What do we know about him?
He was born on Venus and is the son of an American dissident.
Better still.
Finally, with a Jacob Petrov. By him, we know nothing.
Sounds like a Russian.
Gentlemen, our mission was decided upon by the President to the surprise of all of us, and somewhat hurriedly it now appears, since we don't know much about Venus. I have to lead this mission. We are confronted by a great task. We do not know yet what the plenipotentiaries of this planet will demand, how to negotiate with them, whether we shall find a dictatorship or a parliamentary regime similar to ours. The situation is serious. We must risk all if we don't want to lose all. And now there's nothing left to do except to wish all success to the mission of the Vega.
Before I come to the events on Venus, I present two discussions that His Excellency Sir Horace Wood conducted. The first was with me at the site of Venus, which hung in space before us, large as the moon now, but of much more violent brightness, threatening, white.
When do we land, Mannheim?
In 6 hours, Your Excellency.
Another 6 hours. And your task begins.
My task, Your Excellency.
The President has charged you to keep an eye on me. He fears that I also will remain on Venus like our commissioners.
I don't understand, Your Excellency.
You are a member of the Secret Service.
Your Excellency.
In your pocket, you carry one of those little gadgets that can record conversation.
I don't know.
But I know, Mannheim. As a member of the Secret Service, you will never admit that you belong to it. Let's keep quiet about it. Surely, we both know what's at stake.
Your Excellency.
The other conversation took place with Colonel Roy on the observation deck and shortly before landing. The conversation was difficult to record since I could not arouse any suspicion, and it contained some static.
A question, Colonel Roy.
Your Excellency.
In Warsaw, 3 years ago, did you attack with the spaceship Deneb?
Yes.
In Hanoi, 1 year ago, with the spaceship Altair.
Right.
Then I seem to remember that you were somehow involved in this, and
the previous one was quite involved. It was one of those things.
Both spaceships were disguised as passenger ships.
A war ruse, Your Excellency.
This ship is the Vega. I know a little about the heavens, but aren't Altair, Deneb, and Vega the names of the summer stars?
They are.
Are they perhaps also the names of one and the same ship?
Your Excellency is shrewd.
Only my job. You are a dangerous fellow, Roy.
A soldier.
Exactly, and on board.
At the wish of the president.
With some bombs, as it was for in Hanoi.
I wouldn't know what for.
To lend some weight to the proposals which we shall put before the inhabitants of Venus.
I can give no answer, Your Excellency.
No need to, Roy. The inhabitants of Venus expect a peaceful ship. We've given them our word to come without weapons. I've noticed your presence with surprise, Colonel. But as foreign minister of the free nations, I cannot afford to dwell on it further. There's nothing more embarrassing than Viplant, whose red hand knows what his left is doing.
Return to your cabins, please. Return to your cabins, please. Fasten your seatbelts. Fasten your seatbelts, please. The Vega is entering the atmosphere of Venus. The Vega is entering the atmosphere of Venus.
Let's forget our conversation, Roy.
Of course, Your Excellency.
Let us hope you'll never have occasion to remind me of it. I certainly shall not.
Return to your cabins, please. Return to your cabins, please. Fasten your seatbelts, please. Fasten your seatbelts, please.
About the following recording, I wish to remark that you, Mr. President, requested a detailed report from me. But the impression that we received upon landing on Venus is difficult to describe and cannot be reproduced by the photographs of that planet which we know on Earth. We landed at the preassigned point, not far from the north pole of the planet, on the coast of Newton's Island. That Venusian sky is without sun. A heavy, heaving brew of clouds with immeasurable hurricanes roaring through it of glistening silver, as if behind the masses of steam and rain there raged a deadly fire, an impression intensified by the constant electrical discharges of the atmosphere. We left the Vega. We had expected a huge crowd of people, a festive state occasion. His Excellency, Sir Horace Wood, held in his hand the small sheet with the notes of his speech. He had even put on a pair of powerful horn-rimmed glasses. But all we saw were three men in dirty and obsolete pressure suits. Hesitantly, they approached us from the beach. We assumed that they would lead us to a place prepared for the negotiations. But to our surprise, they were the plenipotentiaries themselves.
I'm John Smith.
The Horace Wood.
This is Mr. Peterson, Mr. Petrov.
To His Excellency, the Minister for War. His Excellency, the Minister for Extraterrestrial Regions. My principal co-workers.
Nice to meet you.
Mr. Smith, gentlemen. The moment when first we step onto Venus is for us not without majesty. Not without emotion do we stand on this, for us, so singular ground of another planet. The United Free Nations of the Earth, whose representative we are, know that the ideals... That the ideals to which we have subordinated ourselves and to which we try to live up... The ideals... of humanity and of freedom.
Unfortunately, His Excellency could not complete his beautiful speech. A monstrous storm broke loose, which forced us to flee and to seek the negotiation ship, a type of primitive submarine, which we finally reached drenched to the skin. We were surprised. We had believed that we would negotiate in a town or in a mansion. I present only a fraction of the first session with the delegates of Venus, which took place under terrifying conditions. The 12 members of the Commission of the United Free States were crammed together into a small, poorly lighted room, which was tossed to and fro at will by the waves of the strange ocean.
I welcome the representatives of the United Free Nations of Earth to our negotiation ship. I beg that Mr. Petrov be excused. He's busy running the ship.
The proposals which we've to put before you are important. And someone other than Mr. Petrov take care of running the negotiations?
No, we don't have anyone else.
Gentlemen, I propose to name the capital of Venus as the place for negotiations.
No, we have no capital.
A larger town.
No towns.
At least a place on the mainland.
Well, there's no other place the last two unreliable to carry a building. We all live on ships.
Then I wish to request that we wait for better weather.
Weather on Venus is never better, only worse.
Let us wait until the storm has passed.
There are always storms on Venus. It's only a small one.
I believe you're quite clear about our position, whereas we know little about conditions on Venus. May I therefore ask in what relationship the plenipotentiaries here present stand to their government? And to what extent they represent it?
No, we have no government.
How much understand this?
Just as I said.
Mr. Peterson.
His Excellency, the Minister for Extraterrestrial Regions, has the floor.
Mr. Peterson, if we understand Mr. Smith correctly, the inhabitants of Venus have no fixed government, but only a council, an assembly of representatives, which, in a truly democratic manner, acts according to the will of the people.
We have nothing of the kind.
But after all, Venus has to be governed.
And Venus is large, and we are small. She's cruel. We must struggle if we are to live. We cannot afford the politics.
Mr. Smith.
Yes, His Excellency, the Minister for War, has the floor.
You call yourself a plenipotentiary of Venus, Mr. Smith.
I am a plenipotentiary, yes.
Then someone must have given you the authority.
Well, I did it myself.
So, you acted on your own authority when you contacted us by radio.
You contacted us by radio. It was by chance that we heard your radio message. We wanted to contact neighbors. We heard the earth.
Whereupon you could not resist the temptation and pass yourselves off as plenipotentiaries of Venus.
This is what we are. And it's our duty to negotiate with you because we received your radio message. And none of us can shirk his task, even if the task falls to him by chance. It, well, doesn't suit him in the least.
Too crazy for me.
Then someone else would also have negotiated with us had he received our radio message.
That's right, of course.
And would have acted as plenipotentiary.
Would have been plenipotentiary.
Enough to drive one mad.
Mr. Peterson, has the population of Venus been told of our coming?
Oh, we have informed the nearest ship.
And then?
Yeah, we shall inform them of our discussion.
And if we conclude a treaty?
We shall inform them of that, too.
The population of Venus respects such a treaty.
We are, after all, the plenipotentiaries.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Is it possible to assemble the ships with the population?
It's necessary, but it is, of course, not necessary.
No. Gentlemen, as presiding officer of the delegation from the United Free Nations of Earth, I face a situation which I had not altogether expected. First of all, I therefore propose that the members of our delegation here assembled retire to our spaceship to confer about the position. It must be decided if we can rightly negotiate with you, Mr. Smith and Mr. Peterson, since we find no state on Venus which could act as a legal person and with whom treaties could be concluded. If I'm expressing myself correctly, I'm not a lawyer. I therefore believe that...
The sixth recording... Discussion on board the Vega. The spaceship has left the air jacket of Venus and is 1,000 miles away from the planet.
Another minute in the climate, and swoosh, I would have been a raving maniac. We should send the Easterners here. I've never yet seen a more absurd planet.
Insufferable.
I saw an animal at takeoff look like a chameleon 50 yards long.
Indecent.
To me, Venus appeared sensible. Every time during my speech, when I talked about ideals, it thundered.
And to whom did you give your speech, Wood?
Three idiotic fishermen, or whatever the rascals may be, who in their spare time picked up our radio messages and who lured onto their lousy boat a diplomatic delegation of three ministers and six undersecretaries.
Our scientists spent years to develop a radio device with which one can contact Venus without the Easterners getting at it.
A ridiculous business.
As Minister for Extraterrestrial Regions, I've always raised my voice in warning against such risky ventures.
A god-awful business. We rush here for 30 million miles and all for nothing. That's a tundra.
One must abandon a lost cause.
Venus impresses me. The people up here are free.
I must raise my voice in warning.
No government. Everyone in a position to be plenipotentiary. It's quite something.
Distressing.
It's always distressing to meet an ideal in reality.
I have discovered nothing up there resembling an ideal.
Well, can you imagine any more ideal politics or none at all?
Surely you won't negotiate with those tramps?
Your only chance, War Minister.
What? I don't understand you.
We must find allies.
That we can never do on Venus.
Only on Venus. The Minister for Extraterrestrial Regions proved this strikingly in office conference.
I protest. I've, on the contrary, always raised my voice.
Gentlemen, we must not lose our heads, otherwise we shall lose them permanently. We had a false conception of conditions on Venus. Of course, we did not know what to expect. But we believed that we would find something resembling what we know on Earth. Well, it is not so. The inhabitants of this planet are in a cruel struggle with nature. They can have no other idea than to continue the struggle, to cling somehow to life, even if that life is desperate. We are unimportant to them. But the instant we are capable of arousing in them a hope for a change in their condition, we become important. And we are capable of doing so.
You are optimistic.
Will you offer them money?
Something better. Power.
What do you have in mind?
We recognize Smith and Peterson as plenipotentiaries. And since there is no government, we thereby appoint them to the government.
But we cannot create a government out of nothing.
Out of nothing, but not with nothing. War Minister. We secure this government with the support and the power of the United States of the free part of the earth.
I wish to raise my voice in warning. Peterson is a criminal.
So? Many governments with which we are allied on Earth consist of criminals. In the second place, we promise all inhabitants of this planet that they may return to Earth when they have defeated the Easterners with us.
Isn't that going too far?
We must go far, if we are to reach a distant goal.
And where are they to settle, for heaven's sakes? I wish to raise my voice in
every
warning.
Every climate on Earth will seem to be paradise to them.
Your Excellency.
What is in my eyes?
If the inhabitants of Venus refuse...
And what are they to refuse?
To return, Your Excellency.
Nonsense, Menheim. There is no hell which one does not leap gladly.
Remember Von Stettin? He stayed. And also the other commissioners.
Don't worry about it, young man. We are dealing with human beings just like us. And they can be corrupted just as easily as we can.
In a moment, Beyond 2000 will return with the conclusion of Frederick Durrenmatt's The Mission of the Vega. And this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Have you missed programs in the 2000X series? Would you like to have your own copies? Well, you can now find 2000X and other fine NPR programs on the World Wide Web. I'll give you the Internet address at the end of today's program so that you may have pencil and paper handy. For now, here once again is your host, Harlan Ellison.
And now, the conclusion of today's program.
And so we returned. A recording of the second landing on Venus. Their Excellencies marched towards the beach, with army coats protecting them against the rain and the sand. The rain is hot, the sand burning. The temperature is 120 degrees. A woman comes towards us.
You are Mr. Wood?
Yes.
I am Irene.
You wish to lead us to Mr. Smith and Mr. Peterson?
Smith and Peterson cannot come.
But we'd agreed that...
They have sighted a whale. That is what we call these animals. It is true they are different from whales on Earth, but one can eat them. Most of the animals here cannot be eaten. It is important for us to hunt whales.
With all the respect due these edible whales, which after all come within my own province, since I am the Minister for Extraterrestrial Regions, with whom are we to negotiate now?
With me.
With you?
I am the new plenipotentiary. Peterson has filled me in. We can negotiate in the mess hall of the hospital ship where I am the nurse. The doctor gave me permission, but he said not to be long.
The eighth recording. The mess hall of the hospital ship. Primitive, everything wet. Our discussion of the ministers precedes the negotiation with the nurse.
Let's go back.
I have always raised my voice in warning.
Your plan is wrecked, Wood.
Why?
You wanted to recognize Smith and Peterson as the government, and now they have gone to hunt whales.
There's never been such an insult to a diplomatic delegation. We're being made fools of in a stinking mess hall.
If we didn't have the Russians on our back, it would have been our duty to declare war on these fellows. After all, we have our earthly pride.
Well?
Sir Horace, does this mean that you will appoint the nurse to the government to feed us?
Of course. But this is surely impossible.
The game is lost only when one stops playing.
Wood, this is too much for me. I understand absolutely nothing of politics anymore.
Only the politics of donkeys can be understood, my dear War Minister. What is that moaning one hears, Mannheim?
Is this why Irene has disappeared?
We shall have to negotiate in between maternity cases.
Oh, this heat.
Here's the nurse coming back finally.
Gentlemen, I brought along my husband. He is a deaf mute, a disability which is common here. He will eat some soup. There is no other place.
But of course.
What do you have to say to us?
As chief of our delegation, I am permitted to inform you that the United Free States of Earth recognizes you officially as plenipotentiary and therewith as head of state.
I don't understand that.
We thoroughly appreciate the circumstance that the population of Venus has no need of a government, a fact occasioned by the isolation of this planet from the rest of the solar system. But now, since the United Free States of Earth is recognizing Venus politically, a government becomes formally necessary. The plenipotentiary of Venus is thus automatically identical with the government of Venus.
I am a nurse. I don't understand a word of what you are saying.
Isn't necessary. This is a purely diplomatic and highly technical procedure that permits us to conclude treaties with the population of Venus.
All right, if you insist, I am the head of state.
I would suggest a festive state occasion. We gather together as many inhabitants of Venus as possible.
But why?
To inaugurate you as head of state.
But you already did that.
It must take place publicly.
The inhabitants of Venus have the right to know that they finally possess a government which has received interplanetary recognition. I am convinced that Mars also will recognize Venus.
But surely that does not interest anyone.
Madam.
I am the government of Venus only as far as the Earth is concerned. You have declared the plenipotentiary to be the head of state. That is your business. I happen accidentally to be that plenipotentiary because I'm free this afternoon. Tomorrow it will be another if someone else can manage to be free. I told you earlier that the whale hunt is on.
But one cannot possibly change the government every day.
You need our government. We don't.
We are going in circles.
I'm in this heat, this oppressive, dismal heat.
What do you actually want from us?
Madam.
Don't keep saying madam to me. I am Irene.
Irene. It is a matter of defending freedom.
But why?
Madam.
Excuse me. An amputation has to be performed next door, and we have no anesthesia.
Please.
I simply can't stand the heat.
Irene, the question of how freedom is to be defended does not, it is true, pose itself on this fortunate planet, vis-a-vis its political situation. But it does on ours. There's no doubt that it will also pose itself here, should the powers triumph which threaten freedom on Earth.
The United Free States is threatened by the Eastern Bloc.
Since His Excellency's speech, in which he interpreted our point of view to the nurse, is badly damaged, partly through faulty recording, but partly also by the amputation, I proceed directly to the reproduction of the negotiations immediately following.
Oh, the heat.
Our point of view, our wishes, and our offer should accordingly be clear to the government of Venus.
You wish, therefore, that we take part in a war against the East.
Indeed.
We are not threatened by the East.
I have a question to put to you, Irene.
Oh, ask it.
Are you a Russian?
I was a Pole and was deported 6 years ago.
Doubtlessly, because you advocated the sacred ideals of freedom, of humanity, and of private enterprise.
I was a streetwalker.
My dear child.
You forget that you are talking to a head of state.
Madam. I again give my solemn promise that the inhabitants of Venus will receive permission to return to Earth if they join in the war on our side.
We don't want to return.
Madam, do not forget that you're now speaking in the name of everyone. I can understand that for personal reasons you don't want to return, but there are other people here who were banished to Venus because they fought for freedom on Earth, for a dignified life. They will want to return.
I know no one who wants to return.
The heat.
Mr. Braxton, terrestrial regents has fainted, Your Excellency.
Examine him and I.
Yes. We must go back to the spaceship, Your Excellency. He is in mortal danger.
I also compare it no longer would. I am dripping with sweat, and you are deathly pale.
Very well, Costello. We shall go, Nurse Irene. Will my proposal be submitted to the inhabitants of Venus?
If you wish.
I do wish it. You do not seem to grasp the significance of our mission. We are returning to our spaceship and will come again tomorrow. With whom we shall negotiate then, that we do not know. But we must have the assurance that our proposal will be submitted to the population of Venus.
If you feel it's important.
The ninth recording, in His Excellency's cabin aboard the Vega, 1,500 miles above Venus.
And now a calcium injection. As you wish. There we go.
I'm also letting in more oxygen into the cabin, Your Excellency.
How's the minister?
Bad. You drink this.
Oh, thank you. The war minister?
Not very well, and the undersecretary for Venus suffered a stroke.
I'm sorry. Her condition.
Oh, hopeless.
I myself.
Anemia.
I have that frequently.
But the blood circulation is unsatisfactory.
Doesn't matter.
High temperature.
This comes from anger, Mannheim.
Ah, the Minister for War, Your Excellency.
Sit down on my bed, War Minister.
Thanks. I need it, too. First, we negotiated with a murderer. And the son of a dissident. Then with a streetwalker whom we appointed as head of state. Get to wondering whom we shall confer with next. Dare say with a street cleaner or a serial killer. We should look for someone else to negotiate with.
Only separate ships drifting around somewhere in the oceans. And we cannot find them.
By radio?
No one answers.
What makes me so furious is that no one is even interested in us. The fellows might at least be curious.
Colonel Roy wishes to speak to His Excellency.
All right.
Your Excellency.
What do you want, Colonel Roy?
Your Excellency already knows.
You come to remind me of our conversation.
Indeed, Your Excellency.
How many missiles have we on board?
10.
On orders of the President of the United Free
States. On orders of the President.
I know it is uncomfortable, especially since you were constantly dragging in ideals, Wood.
Why don't you simply send an undersecretary to these people with an ultimatum?
I shall go, War Minister. Alone with Mannheim.
The 10th recording. His Excellency and I were conducted by the deaf-mute husband of the streetwalker to the mess hall of the hospital ship, where a haggard man, some 60 years old, awaited us in the shadowy darkness of the dripping room.
It is difficult to welcome you, would you come on a sad occasion?
You are...
Von Staten? You studied with me at Oxford and Heidelberg.
You've changed.
Somewhat.
We read Plato together in Kant.
Quite so.
It should have occurred to me that you're behind all of this.
I am behind nothing.
You are our commissioner and must have seized control of Venus.
Nonsense. I became a doctor. This is my free hour. Now, I am the plenipotentiary and will talk with you.
The Russian commissioner?
Here's something grails. Do you have a cigarette?
Mannheim will offer you one,
sir.
I have not smoked any for 10 years. I am curious how it will taste now.
Light.
Thank you.
Do you know what's going on?
But of course, Irene has told me everything. Nice idea to name her head of state. Now we address her only as Her Excellency.
Have the others been notified?
We radioed to all ships to ask if anyone wanted to go back.
Any answer?
No one.
I am tired, Bonstead. I must sit down.
You must be having gonorrhea and the high temperature.
We all have it at first. None of you wants to return.
That is how it is.
I cannot grasp it.
You come from the Earth. That is why you cannot grasp it.
But you too are from the Earth.
We have forgotten that.
Surely one cannot live here.
We can.
And it must be a terrible life.
It is a true life.
What do you understand by this?
What would I be on Earth? A diplomat? Eileen? A whore? Others will be criminals and some idealists persecuted by some state machine or other.
And now?
You see, I am a doctor.
And operate without anesthesia.
Cigarettes. No longer tastes good. It has become wet since this humidity and just steams.
I'm thirsty.
Have some of the boiled water.
The damn light in the hatches is lemon yellow. Stinking steam in the air makes me feel faint.
There is no other air? Only the light changes. Lemon yellow. Sometimes like glistening silver. Often also sandy red.
I know.
We must produce everything ourselves. Tools, clothes, ships, radios, weapons against the gigantic animals. Everything is lacking. Experience, knowledge, custom. Trust in the ground which changes constantly. No medicines, plants, fruits, which we do not know, and most of them are poisonous. Even the water one must get used to slowly.
Tastes horrible.
It is drinkable.
What have you got in exchange for the gentle earth? Steaming oceans, burning continents, red-hot deserts, roaring skies. What knowledge did you gain for this?
Man is something precious. And his life? His life is a grace.
Ridiculous. On Earth, we've had this knowledge a long time.
Do you live by this knowledge?
Can you?
Venus forces us to live by our knowledge. That is the difference. If we do not help one another here, we perish.
That is why you did not return.
That is why?
And betrayed the Earth.
I deserted.
Into a hell which is a paradise.
Were we to return, we would have to kill. Since helping and killing is the same with you, we can kill no longer.
We must be reasonable. You two are in danger. If the Easterners defeat us, they will come here.
We are not afraid.
You have a false estimate of the political situation.
You forget that we are the penal colony of the whole Earth. Mankind gets ready to fight for possession of beautiful mansions, profitable pieces of land. Not for the dump heap that is common to all. No. No one is interested in us. You only need us to tether us like dogs to your war chariot. Once the war is over, this reason too will disappear. It is true you can send us here, but not force us to go back. You have no power over us. You have dismissed us from mankind. Well, Venus is more terrible than you. Whoever steps on her soil falls under her law in whatever capacity he may come, and he is granted no freedom other than hers.
The freedom to die like a dog.
The freedom to act justly and to do what is necessary. On the Earth, we could not do that. I could not do that either. The Earth is too beautiful, too rich. Its possibilities are too immense. You are seduced into accepting inequality there. On the Earth, poverty is shameful, and therefore shamelessly reviled. Only here is poverty natural. Our sweat alone sticks to our food and to our tools, but not injustice as on Earth. And so, we fear you. We fear your abundance. We fear your false life. Fear a paradise, which is a hell.
I must tell you the truth, Bonstetten. We have bombs with us.
Hmm. Nuclear bombs?
Hydrogen bombs.
With a cobalt jacket around?
With a cobalt jacket.
I thought so.
I had never suspected. It happened on orders of our president. I was surprised, Bonstetten, when I learned of it yesterday.
I am willing to believe you.
Naturally, it embarrasses me, but we're in a desperate position. Our goodwill cannot be doubted. Freedom and humanity will win through.
Naturally.
We're simply forced for the moment to take sharp measures.
Obviously.
I'm really sorry, Bonstetten.
Mm-hmm. You will set us the bones if we do not help you?
We must.
We cannot stop you.
You are lost.
Many. Others will escape. The ships were warned when you came. We always lived closely together. But now, we are scattered over the whole planet.
You had a presentiment of everything?
After all, we were once on the Earth, too.
I must go now.
You must relax when you return. Go to Switzerland. To the Elgard. I was there once, my last summer, 15 years ago. I never forgot the blue sky.
I fear the political conditions.
Of course. Your political conditions. I hadn't even thought of that.
You still have a family on Earth? Your wife, two sons? Have you a message for them?
No.
Farewell.
die well, you ought to say. My hospital will not escape your bones.
Arnstetten.
Irene's husband will take you ashore.
Naturally, we will not set off the bombs, Bonstetten. I only used it as a threat. Since we can't force you, it would be mere senseless cruelty. I give you my word.
I shall not accept it.
I am not a butcher.
But a man from the earth. You cannot take back the deed which you could imagine.
I promise.
You will break your promise. Your mission is wrecked. You still have pity for me, but then you return to your ship. Your pity will fade, and your suspicion awaken. The Russians might come and conclude an agreement with us, you will think. You will, of course, know that is impossible. That we would treat the Easterners as we have treated you. But to this knowledge will cling a tiny particle of fear. That we might perhaps ally ourselves with your enemies after all, and for the sake of this tiny little particle of fear, and for the sake of the slightest uncertainty at your heart, you will have the bombs dropped. Even if they are senseless, even if you hit the innocent, and so we shall die.
You are my friend, Monster. I cannot kill a friend.
One kills easily when one does not see the victim. And you, will not see me die.
You say that as if it's something easy to die.
Every necessity is easy. One must only accept it. And the most necessary, the most natural presence on this planet is death. It is everywhere, at all times. The heat is too great, the radiation too intense. Even the sea is radioactive. We do not fear your bombs, for we live in the midst of death and we have to learn to fear it no more.
You are unassailable in the fortress of your poverty and your closeness to death.
Go now.
Anstett and I admire you. You are right, and I am wrong. I admit it.
It is nice of you.
What you told me about your poverty and your dangerous life touches me deeply.
Ah, that is good of you.
If I weren't foreign minister of the free United States of Earth, I would stay with you.
Ah, that is noble of you.
But naturally, I cannot just leave the Earth in the lurch.
Yes, of course, obvious.
It's tragic that I'm not free in this respect.
It must not be said.
The bomb shall not be dropped.
We will not talk about it anymore.
My word of honor.
Farewell.
The 11th recording. The spaceship Vega is flying back to Earth.
Your Excellency.
The negotiations are petered out with no results, Colonel Roy.
Then do I have the bombs dropped, Your Excellency? Excellency, must decide now. The President gave orders.
If the President gave orders, Colonel Roy, then just drop the bombs. Spread as evenly over Venus as possible.
Ready for takeoff.
Ready for takeoff, sir.
Shall I fasten your seatbelt, Your Excellency?
Yes, please.
Thank you. How do you feel, Your Excellency?
Chained.
The red light, Your Excellency. We start in 20 seconds. 10 more seconds.
Wrecked.
We are starting.
Mannheim.
Your Excellency.
The Easterners might come and conclude a pact with them.
Exactly.
It is improbable, really, but still possible, unfortunately. The possibility, however improbable it may be, forces us to drop the bombs.
Mm-hmm. Open the hatches. Open, sir.
We must be sure.
Of course, Your Excellency.
Fire.
Missiles fired, sir.
How high are we?
60 miles.
Full speed ahead.
Full speed ahead, sir.
How is the Minister for Extraterrestrial Reasons?
He is reviving.
the war minister.
Same old fellow again.
I ought to feel better.
Tomorrow a council of ministers convenes.
Politics goes on.
Yes.
Bombs on target.
On target, sir.
The event. Unobservable. But we can surely imagine it. All this nauseates me. Venus is terrible. They're all criminals up there, after all. I'm certain that Bonstead had wanted to ally himself with the Eastern Bloc.
Mm-hmm.
It's a filthy act they put on.
I believe it too, Your Excellency.
Now the bombs have fallen, and soon they will fall on Earth. Glad that I have an atom-proof shelter. For the sake of the job. And vacations in wartime, a foreign minister has them constantly. Surely I have to refrain from fishing. I will read the classics. Preferably Thomas Stearns Eliot. I find him the most soothing. There's nothing worse for one's health than exciting literature.
Never was a truer word spoken, Your Excellency.
You have been listening to The Mission of the Vega by Frederick Durrenmatt, translated by Alfred Schilden. In the cast, Christopher Tabori as Mannerheim, Norman Lloyd as Wood, Stefan Rudnicki as Roy, Milton James as the Minister for War, James Otis as the Minister for Extraterrestrial Regions, Newell Alexander as Smith, Gabrielle DeCure as Irene, and George Murdoch as Bonstetten, with Ira Burton, Laura Kellogg, and Lorna Raver. The play was produced and directed by Yuri Rosovsky. Warren Dewey was our recordist, and Jamie Cerniglia was our mixer.
In addition to these NPR broadcasts, 2000X may be downloaded from the Internet at www.audible.com, where you will find a library of 22,000 hours of spoken word audio. The 2000X series may be listened to at your PC or on a variety of Audible-ready mobile digital audio players for listening anytime, anywhere. www.audible.com. ...2000X is produced by the Hollywood Theater of the Ear in association with National Public Radio. Major support for this program has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts. Additional support comes from the Wallace Reader's Digest Funds, seeking to enrich community life through support of education, arts, and culture. And Borders Books and Music, celebrating the arts by supporting cultural programming on NPR. www.borders.com. I'm Robert Foxworth, and this is NPR, National Public Radio.